You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 15 December, we've got Chinese house price index data year on year coming shortly. It has been negative since May 2022. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and recorded from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kenyon Yona, Prime XBT. Commodities, precious metals, can they carry on? What about oil and demand there? And then copper with the AI and power rush. And then Sinisha Pakrasamy, Chief Economist, Momentum. Saab has flagged the AI boom as a potential threat to the local economy if it starts to collapse. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Kenyon Yona. You find him at Prime XBT. Kia, always appreciate our chats. And a couple of big stories I want to delve into today. The first is gold. And I got to say, if you were a gold bull back in January, and I don't even think the gold bulls were talking plus 4,000. I don't think the gold bulls were expecting what we saw in the gold miners. It really has been, it's been astounding to watch.
It truly has. And I think for me, it comes as a bit of a surprise, because I think when you work on an institutional desk, sometimes you look at trade flows that are coming from your clients, and continuously, when I was still in institutional trading, the biggest traded product was gold. And it then came to the realization that people are starting to see gold as an integral part of the portfolio allocation and not just an inflation hedge. Because when you look at why gold remains at elevated levels, it's past the inflation hedge, but it's also a hedge against the dollar, because the US dollar was perennially weak going into the first three quarters. It just did a bit of a catch up coming into Q4.
And I got to say, if we look ahead to next year, and I'm never going to put my head in the block and try and predict the gold price, but I would say the drivers that have driven it in 25 are still out there. And even if that just sort of supports the price rather than runs it higher, but those underlying pinnings are there. Maybe price sensitivity starts to come into it. I'm thinking central bankers, but what's out there continues.
And there's been record buying. If you look at the accumulation of different central banks of gold, as I said, a hedge against the dollar and not against inflation, you do anticipate that the key drivers still remain. I mean, the pace of Fed easing is one that's still at the fore of the mind of people who are holding gold. But looking at the data which came out yesterday, you may get more cuts in 2026. And when you look at real yields and as well as geopolitical risk, I don't think those have tapered off, because trade tension still remains. We still have tensions in the Middle East, and we never know what new geopolitical risk is going to be out there in 2026. And looking at the man who sits in the White House, you'd never know where the next geopolitical situation is going to come from.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you can roll a dice and you'd still potentially be wrong. The risk to the miners, perhaps, is that the cost pressures, that costs start to get significant, that they maybe do some bad deals or something like that. But I mean, at these levels, the risks are not there, but they perhaps a little more muted. Or am I being slightly optimistic here for the miners?
I think they're very muted at this level, because I mean, I was running an analysis on the forecasted earnings on the top 40 index, because we actually also have our mag cap companies, and most of them are gold miners.
Yeah.
We have this Meg 10. And when you look at the earnings attributor for forecasted earnings on the SA top 40, most of them are miners. And that's purely at the level of, at this price that gold is, even if it had to remain, the operating leverage specifically for companies which are not the top tier producers is really astounding. They are sitting on record cash. They are going to distribute it to shareholders. But one thing that you must always, always look out for, and this was something I learned from Wayne McCurry, is that deals which are made at the top of a commodity super cycle usually don't work out very well.
That is an absolute lesson. You overpay massively. What about PGMs? And they were late to the party. Sort of mid-year, we started to see some activity in PGMs. Is your sense that the prices, particularly platinum and palladium, they're not anywhere near the records yet, but they're certainly looking a lot better. Does that hold into next year?
I think what really shocked the market was actually the buying of platinum by the Chinese for precious metals. But I think what really came out later for me was the supply chain dynamics in the metal late into May, meaning that the users of autocatalytic converters were not stockpiling, and the recyclable market was also has seen a high demand. So that's what later led to the price of platinum going higher. Do I believe that carries on to the new year? No, I don't believe it, because I think they would have planned better going into the year 2026. But that does not mean that the price will go down. It may just stay at the levels that it is right now.
I get your point on that, and I like it. They were maybe caught flat-footed. That's unlikely to happen again. Let's turn to oil. You have said to me more than once, the world is awash with oil. And if I look at the Brent price, absolutely it is. I mean, Brent is holding. It's above 60, but it's looking fragile. And that picture doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon. We've got Russian oil coming into the market. We've got Saudi Arabia and OPEC pushing up production. We have a ton of oil out there.
And there's a ton of oil. But one thing that I was looking at was global primary energy consumption. It's actually up in 2025, and that's led by electricity demand, and that's just fast growing. But I think oil comes at a level that there's actually cheap oil around from sanctioned countries like Venezuela and Russia. And the biggest oil consumer has been China and India. And what they are doing is that they're buying black market oil. And these sanctions by the US are not necessarily coming and driving the price up. And now, when you think about big oil producing nations, they rely on the revenue to fund state expenditure, meaning that they still need to maintain the state expenditure. So if the oil price comes down, they just increase production. And that's what you're seeing by OPEC Plus, that many of the sovereign states where oil is the biggest revenue generator are just producing more, and the world just has a supply glut of oil at the moment.
And that is, and we've said this before, this can't be. This is not good for Sasol. I mean, in a world where oil is coming lower, Rand is strong, chemical prices are in the doldrums, the Sasol story is bleak.
It's very bleak, and any company that's in chemicals right now is just a bleak story. And at the moment, even with the turnaround plan from the new management, I still am not touching any oil companies. I'm interested in energy companies, but not particularly oil companies.
And that's a key distinction, because of course energy, and in fact when one of my previous guests were talking, I was reading an article that Texas needs to add as much power as California has in the next sort of decade. This is the AI boom now, the AI boom slash bubble, but energy is the new space, and to preface, energy x oil.
Energy x oil, because as I said, global energy consumption is up, and it's all these data centers which almost crashed the market last week when we couldn't open the CME. So now we're stuck with the fact that we have all these data centers that I think people don't realize the scale of these data centers and how much energy consumption really happens. There's a town in the US where NVIDIA has a data center that currently is not operating because the state is not building infrastructure quick enough to funnel energy to that data center. And they're just waiting in line like the rest of us in Pretoria who've seen the energy infrastructures just fall apart. So it literally, I think people don't realize the scale of the energy the fourth industrial revolution really needs.
It is absolutely mind-boggling. Which then, as a last point, what about copper? Because energy is wires. Wires is copper. I have, and I've heard this story more than once over the last many decades, that copper is the commodity. It's around highs, but it I don't know, it never seems to sort of do a gold on us, I suppose.
I think the prices are always very volatile, and that I just think is just purely how do you forecast production and how do you forecast demand. And always, all the time, I think people are caught on either side of that eventuality. And I mean, I was looking as far out as 2035, which is 10 years from now, and they're telling us that we'll have a copper deficit. And I'm saying, okay, those are great forecasts, but we heard that a while back, but it hasn't led to the price coming now, right now. The price will remain very volatile, but generally, I think it will be strong. And it's just purely supported from the energy transition. I think electrifications, renewables, electric vehicles, I think will offset any traditional weakness we see in copper. And when you look at across the base metals, copper is the only one which is held strong. Aluminium, slightly strong. Iron ore, not doing well. Nickel, generally in surplus. Yeah, so copper, if you're going to want a base metal play or choose a miner which has base metals, I'd rather be in one that has a lot of copper.
Yeah, I take the point in that. If you're going to do base metals, it probably is copper. We'll leave it there. Kenyanyona Prime XBT, appreciate the insights. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Sunisha Pakrasamy, Chief Economist at Momentum. Sunisha, always appreciate the time. The South African Reserve Bank, their November 2025 FSR report identifying potential AI risks. I want to touch around those risks, of course, but what is the FSR report?
Hi, Simon, and thank you so much for having me on the show. So what we have from the South African Reserve Bank twice a year is a financial stability review. And basically, this means that the South African Reserve Bank actually has a dual mandate. The first portion of that, which we know quite well, given the interest rate decision meetings we usually hear, this is to maintain price stability in the economy. But the second one, and I think it's less well known in the broader domain, is that they are there to also enhance financial stability. And so this report that they publish twice a year is to monitor and to review the risks to financial stability in South Africa, how they can mitigate some of those risks, and also look at the strengths as well as the weaknesses of the financial system. So it's quite a balanced report also, because it does take into account what we have done well.
That's a great point. And one of the things that they identify as a potential risk is AI. And, you know, this is not necessarily the AI directly, but the Mag 7 stocks, for example, 35% of the index, AI data center spend surging. They are worried around that, and not as it's going up, but if that turns on us and we see a correction, it could spill into global markets. It'll certainly spill into South African markets.
100%. And so it's really about the concentration of those technology stocks that tends to increase systematic risk in the system. So when we look at the so-called Magnificent Seven, their weight in the S&P 500 index has now basically tripled over the last decade. So it started off at about 11% in about 2015, and that's now sitting at 35%. So part of that is because they've had strong earnings, and they've got this massive dominance in digital and technology-related products. But of course, there has also been this big wave of global enthusiasm for artificial intelligence, and we have seen in the past that this can potentially be a bubble territory. And I think that risk can then spill over into the rest of the global economy. And, you know, that can have some big uncertainties for smaller open economies like South Africa.
And that's the key point. We don't have AI stocks on our market, but it's that spillover effect. It can weaken rand. We'll see money fleeing emerging markets, asset prices under pressure. I mean, you know, we're almost collateral damage, but that damage can be severe. I mean, in many senses, the 2008-09 crisis was nothing to do with us, but we felt the impact.
Definitely. And so whenever sentiment globally turns sour, that risk-off sentiment tends to play out in the markets that are high beta. And South Africa is one of those high beta plays. And so when emerging markets do poorly because they are perceived as being higher risk, mm-hmm. South Africa tends to take the beating as well. And so how that effectively happens is that when that risk aversion spikes and people get a bit jittery around market developments, we find that investment outflows happen from emerging markets like South Africa.
Yeah.
It also tends to correlate then with weaker currencies. And then investors demand a higher risk premium for holding, you know, South African stocks or South African bonds. And so that level of market volatility can negatively affect the asset prices across South African asset classes.
Yeah, and hence the tech sector and that concentration becomes a vulnerability to financial systems, ourselves included. They did have an interesting point. Their talk around the underlying productivity impact is actually limited. An MIT study says that firms are spending, but most of them are not actually finding any measurable benefit from their spend. And that perhaps is to me, the part of the key point of that worry.
This is the big worry here. So, I mean, in order to ascertain whether or not the artificial intelligence boom is actually being felt in the real economy, the only real measure that can capture that is whether or not productivity gains have been experienced to the same extent. Mm. So we've seen a lot of the spending happen. We know that data center spending, as an example, was one of the primary reasons that we had fixed investment actually increasing in the United States this year. But has it actually translated into any productivity and economic related gains on the ground? And that is not yet evident. So it can potentially mean that this bubble could potentially run out of steam at some point because you're not seeing those gains trading into the rest of the economy. Another angle is that artificial intelligence and this technology boom is very heavily dependent on energy. And I think there's still a very big question mark out there whether markets like the US have enough energy capacity to sustain this level of the boom in artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I was actually reading an article recently that said Texas needs to add as much energy as California in the next decade. I just don't know how that possibly happens. If we take a wider picture from this report, obviously the AI concerns, and we've been speaking about that. But other than that, our system is, that they say, assessed as resilient. I mean, our financial sector remains well positioned and broadly very resilient, notwithstanding potential outside threats.
And I think more importantly, they assume that this is going to continue for the next year period. So this report basically is a reflection on the last 6 months, but it also gives us a little bit of an indicator of what's going to happen over the next 12-month period. And, they believe that according to all the risks that mm-hmm. they look at, which are cyclical financial risks, the things that move in conjunct with economic and financial cycles, things like structural and perpetual risks. So, things that are not affected by economic cycles, but are rather influenced by global dynamics or our own financial system or how the system is being innovated for the future. Mm-hmm. And then they also look at operational and event risks. And based on all these categories, by and large, most of these risks have receded since the last report was produced in June. So sitting relatively comfortably, even in a world where, geopolitical tensions and event mm-hmm. risks are still quite high.
There is that, and I'm never going to second guess the SOB, but in this case, I mean, there is evidence on the ground. I mean, we've got the ratings upgrade. We're still junk, but moving in the right direction. The new inflation target, the medium-term budget policy statement, GDP was a low bar, but there is a lot to say. It's cautious optimism. We are moving in the right direction. Slowly, yes, but it is certainly happening.
Yeah, there's an inkling of good news and just in time for the festive season, I guess. But, I think that all these positive attributes in the economy suggest that we are finally turning the corner. So as you mentioned, we are coming off quite a low base. Mm. But I don't think we've had such a good spate of news in a number of years now. And so that could then lead to higher levels of both business and consumer confidence, which we know is the cheapest form of stimulus, as the president has told us in the past. And that can become quite reinforcing for further economic growth prospects.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, as you say, it's a low base, but we will take the good news, particularly, as you say, as we head into the holiday season. Sinsha Pakrasamy, Chief Economist, Momentum, always appreciate the insights.
Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets. That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We hear every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Wednesday. Narina Fisser, ETFs.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.